This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free, and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot, so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful-looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. If you've ever gone through the process of looking for a condo or house in a development that's still just a hole in the ground or an empty field, you probably spent time in a presentation center looking over drawings, plans, and maybe even miniature models of the development. Those places start to tell the story, but it requires a serious leap of faith to buy a property worth hundreds of thousands of dollars based on some nice drawings, maps, and pamphlets. There are touchscreen displays that digitize that material and arguably make it better, but if you really want to sell and close, making people feel like they're virtually immersed in the specific property they're looking at is several leaps forward. I spoke with Hadrian Lepore, a graphic designer who a decade ago started SmartPixel in Montreal, offering software tools and creative services to help truly visualize things like commercial, industrial, and residential real estate. They do virtual reality without the embarrassing goggles, and they do it very well. The company is thriving, has 60 people and 15 more planned for 2020, and it's also planning to expand the product. SmartPixel also does basic digital signage when asked, but when you could do 3D visualizations of entire real estate developments, putting videos on screens is a bit of a shrug. I had a great chat with Lepore about the company's roots, how it does things, and where SmartPixel is going. I've seen your company at least one trade show. You're not all that familiar, I would say, in the digital signage ecosystem, whatever that is. So best way to get into this is for you to explain what SmartPixel is all about.
So yeah, we've been in business for a little bit over 10 years already. We specialize in providing a wow factor and turnkey digital experiences for companies to communicate within their company or towards customers. We basically focus on providing touchscreen applications meant for multi-touch and multi-user experiences, so mostly for big, large displays. So we provide the software, but also the hardware, allowing to maximize or to improve as much as possible the user experience.
But you're a little bit different from a typical company that's doing wow factor. I think in terms of creative shops that are doing very large video walls and, you know, all the generated data and everything that may come out of that. You're much more focused about or on the actual wow factor of the user experience, correct? Particularly as it relates to things like real estate.
Yeah, so exactly. So we've been doing applications for a number of industries, but in the past 6 years, we really focused on two, which are mainly real estate, like you were saying, and engineering or also industrial. So basically, we, for example, for the real estate side, we will create a very engaging environment all in 3D with different features. So, for example, we will project within a 3D city a building before it's actually built, and will enable the customer to filter the type of apartments he would be looking at according to either pricing or area or number of bedrooms or whatsoever. And people will actually be able to have the feeling of stepping inside the apartment, looking at the view they're going to have from their windows, simulating also sunrise and sunset, allowing to see if you're going to have a sunrise or sunset from your particular unit. So it's a pretty complex and complete tool, allowing a full grade simulation of the unit, the architecture, but also the surrounding, including cities or any type of surrounding environment.
Mm-hmm. So this is the sort of thing that you would have in whether it's a commercial or a residential real estate sales center or presentation center, right?
Correct. So it really applies to any type of real estate. Like I said, also, it can apply to industrial or engineering. So, for example, a company who wants to project, for example, a residential tower will be able to use our framework to do that. Or also a company who simply wants to allocate different tenants for a commercial grade type of real estate, that can also be used. So it really, it's very, very flexible, and it it not only targets a specific range.
Mm-hmm. This is pretty labor intensive stuff, though. Like you would not just buy your software and develop this yourself. You would need quite a lot of expertise to develop this sort of thing. So is most of what you do a service?
Exactly. So we're a service-based company. We do not have yet a product. So companies who want to have our service will contact us. We will elaborate about 20 questions with them. And depending on the type of files they have for their own architecture, we will then have to present our scope of work. And it's the scope of work will then be reflected through numbers of hours of production on our side to come up with a solution. But we are currently actually starting to focus on a product. The product will allow visualization companies like us in the beginning to benefit from our range of intellectual property as source code and all of this to actually recreate those types of experience with a minimal effort in terms of programming.
Right. Are you able to do that because over time you've discovered that there are certain tasks and templates and things that are repetitive?
That's exactly it. You got the exact answer. So basically by repeating so many times the similar features, so we've delivered, I don't know how many projects so far, but certainly a bit over 120 or 130 in the past 5 years in terms of real estate. So most of the, depending on where we sell our service, so let's say in North America or in Europe, people will have a different type of need. So we've been able to reproduce those features that they need and bundle them into different types of templates. And now we can internally reuse those templates and adjust them if needed. Mm-hmm. But exactly the idea of offering a product is actually to summarize what was most common and be able to provide a product to customers so that they can actually themselves import those 3D models. So obviously they would need some type of knowledge in terms of modeling, but there's a number of companies in the world that can do that. And then they would simply import them into the environment and select the type of features they want in a kind of a runtime editor so that they can use the or actually sell those types of software to their own customers. Mm-hmm.
When it comes to presentation centers, no matter the real estate type, it's possible to do basic touch screens and take a flat file of a set of layouts and the site plan and all that sort of things and put that on a touchscreen and somebody could walk in and navigate through that. But that's, I would imagine, kind of the bare bones of what you could do. And I'm gathering what you're saying is you can kind of build up from there. It could start with that sort of thing. But if you really want wow factor, you have to go a lot deeper.
Yeah, so we have, again, by doing so many times other types of presentations. So in the early beginning, we would simply do like touchscreen presentation tools. So we would allow users to actually do some gestures on a screen and trigger specific files, videos, PDF, images, and allowing multi-user gestures, they would be able to rotate them and make them bigger, smaller, filter some type of images. So it's possible to really remain in a mostly kind of 2D a user experience, but we can also, of course, then if it's the need to present environments or a machinery or pieces of engineering or whatever, we can go into 3D. And obviously, when we go into 3D, we enlarge quite a much the scope of work that we can do.
Yeah. So essentially, you're saying to a client, sure, we can do 2D, but we can do 3D, but what's your budget tolerance?
Budget is always a clear question that we need to understand in the early beginning. We can do like any type of touchscreen experience. So we try to focus in what we are really good at. There's a number of application or products on the market that will allow a simple type of marketing agency to create a normal type of 2D user experience. So we can do those things. Some of our customers still like to go through us instead of using like a license-based product simply because we have more flexibility, because our framework allows us, for example, to implement physics and other great assets. But it's something we can do, obviously. So we have applications ranging from, let's say, $5,000 up to $150,000, depending on the budget, but the needs and the purpose and what type of client are they aiming for and all of that.
Mm-hmm. So for maybe a home builder with a small subdivision, they're maybe not going to spend $150,000, but you get a condominium developer in a 40-story building that costs hundreds of millions to put up. That kind of cost is a rounding error.
Yeah, exactly. For example, if we're talking about real estate, even though we can still remain in the 2D interface, because we could simply be presenting a simple site plan of, let's say, a small project of 15 or 20 different houses. And by clicking on one of those plots, on the site plan, it would trigger then, for example, a render that would have been done by a third-party company. Mm-hmm. So it's possible even for real estate to remain in very low cost.
Right. What's the business argument for this? I've been in presentation centers and walked around and saw big, printed out site plans and leafed through brochures and things like that. And as a digital guy, I thought, this, you could do a hell of a lot more here than what I'm seeing. But when you get into these presentations, when you're talking to a potential client, how do they see the business rationale for investing up to $150,000, and how do you make that case?
Well, it's simple. It's really about all the features. So again, it mostly applies to, where clients will actually spend that type of budget is mainly where they have a very, very high density project. So let's say, of course, a vertical tower of, let's say, 50 story may have like 400 or 500 different units. Mm-hmm. So when you make up the numbers, it becomes quite quite affordable actually per unit. But the thing also is that it's important to remember the immersive aspect. So for example, in a tower, people like to live in heights because they can actually have a great view. Mm-hmm. So how can you actually simulate the view that those people are going to have? Are there going to be other towers in between that are going to block my view? Am I going to be able to reach and see the ocean, the lake, or the river? So all of those things are really, really nice to offer a kind of a simulation to your customers. So that's one of the reasons. Mm-hmm. And the other reason about the wow factor is not only wow, but it's also about the utility. So being able to compare plans on the same screen, being able to actually filter through 400 or 500 units, which are the 2, 3, or 4 units that are corresponding to your budget, to your family size, to your the type of view you want again. So all of those things are only achievable through a real-time 3D immersive software. And this is where there's a big value for those.
So it sounds, because it's real-time 3D, you're borrowing on things like gaming engines.
Totally. We're using Unity. We're a big fan of the Unity gaming engine. We actually are working very closely with them on developing specific feature for their engine. We recently have been selected by Unity as one of their top service provider for the AEC industry. So AEC stands for Architecture, Engineering, and Construction.
Okay.
So there's a number of companies that do this on the market, but we've been able to push the limits of their visual quality quite far by developing specific shaders that adapt to our type of use cases.
Is it a benefit or a problem to be in a city that's pretty well known for gaming companies?
That's a very good question. Actually, recently Unity decided to open a new office in Montreal. They're actually hiring 400 different people. We have in Montreal, obviously, Warner Brothers, Ubisoft, Behavior, EA Games. So we have a lot of big studios, and I don't know how many, probably around 100 different very small size or medium sized studios. So it is challenging to find professional workers, but it is also obviously one of the best spots in the world right now, because the education and the school surrounding those types of knowledge are abundant, and there's a good talent here. Mm-hmm. The style of living also is very good, so a lot of people are attracted to move into Montreal with their families. So it is a challenge, but obviously less a challenge than opening a studio in another city where there's nothing related to video game happening.
Mm-hmm. You do have offices in other cities. Are those primarily sales offices?
Yeah, correct. So we have offices in Toronto, in Bogota. So Toronto is basically for all the English-speaking part of Canada. So we're from Montreal. It's a French, yep. French-speaking province in Quebec. We have an office in Bogota who manages all the Latin American market, south of the U.S., Florida, Texas, and also Spain. We have an office in France to manage France, England, Germany, Swiss, Italy. And we have another remote office in Dubai to manage all of the Middle East and Asian territories.
Is it a long sales cycle, or if you show a demo reel and you know get the right meeting, you can close people pretty quickly?
Well, it rarely takes less than 3 months from a demo to a sales, to a confirmed sales or purchase order received. But it can often take more than 12 up to 18 months. The reason why is that lots of those companies didn't know that yet those types of tools would exist. So they didn't budget them in their actual year,
right.
Fiscal year. So most of the time we need to wait until the next fiscal year. And also until they have another project that fits that type of investment. So our sales cycle is long, but we've been able recently to start targeting famous projects and qualified clients in an early stage,
right,
to make sure that we spend our sales force correctly.
And do you hear from your clients that once they start using this, that it makes a difference in terms of the sale? Does it accelerate the sale or?
Definitely.
Help? Okay.
Yeah. So two things about that. First of all, I mean, it depends on the markets, but in Montreal, we have tons of projects going on right now. It's very often that in the first weekend, they will sell more than half of their property. It really, really goes fast. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge plus value. That's why we also have kind of a rental department, because for those specific events, our clients like to rent large format touchscreen surfaces. So that will actually help receiving more people in their events. Mm-hmm. But it also really helps actually selling the harder types of units. So either the most expensive ones or also the ones that are less interesting for the customers, because it's a seducing interface and user experience. So of course that speeds up and that adds a lot of value to the apartment themselves. And in terms of recurrency, it's very also popular. So a project will most of the time have several faces. So obviously once a client is on board with us, they will like to use our services to go on for phase 2, 3, and 4, let's say.
Right.
But even inside a company, we're working with big developers who have 4 to 12, 15 different projects in 1 year. And usually once we have developed a workflow and established trust and people are happy with our services, it becomes easier to close further sales with them.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
How important is the display canvas? Is it important to have a 65, 75 inch display that's interactive that people can work with, or can you do it off of a laptop?
So it really depends. So of course it can. We've done from cell phone applications up to tablets to laptop to 32 inch, 40 inch, 55 inch. We've done video walls that have up to 8 displays connected all the one together, creating a 300 inch diagonal. Mm-hmm. So what is important for us is, since we are at arm length, it is important to have a very high density of pixels. So we have optimized our workflows to be able to deliver 60 frames per second refresh rates applications on a 4K resolution. So that means that if, for example, you're going to use, let's say, a 50-inch, which is a very standard format for what we do, we will push the application in 4K resolution, allowing someone who is at arm length to barely see the pixels that are on the screen. So it's really all about pixels and refresh rate. This is what we aim for. Now, the size of the surface depends on how many people will use it or if it's going to be used in front of an audience. But for us, primarily, it's the user using the touchscreen. We want him or her to actually feel a very smooth and accurate and beautiful experience. So that's why we will always push for 4K resolutions.
And not just a regular little PC. I'm sure you're advocating you need a really good graphics card and so on.
For a laptop experience, we will do them. The thing is that most of the users will want to have a mobile version because they will often travel to trade shows. So they don't always have actually a sales center. Mm-hmm. So it's possible for them to use our applications on a mobile environment. Recently, there's new Razer's laptop and there's more coming up on the market that have 4K resolution on a very small 15-inch display with touch and multi-touch. So this is actually insane because the density of the pixel is so small. And those computers now have like 28D video cards in there, so they're beasts. Mm-hmm. And it really makes an experience that is incredible. So again, the higher density of pixel we have, the better will be the experience to my perception. But it's really a matter of what people want to achieve.
In a typical presentation center, is the customer driving the display or is it more of an assisted selling tool?
That's a good question also. So again, for whatever it is related to pre-construction sales tools for real estate, very often a salesperson will be assisting customers. But because the experience is very playful and interactive, it also happens that the salesperson will let the person use the screen by himself. So when we have like launching event where we will have, let's say, 10 displays being used in a event room, most of them will be used only by users. So it is a very intuitive and user-friendly type of experience, but it happens often that, you know, it's going to be assisted by a salesperson. When we do applications for like standalone surfaces, let's say in a shopping mall or in a retail or other type of environments, obviously then we need to focus on creating a storyline that is very intuitive to make sure that people will actually find benefit to use the touchscreen without getting lost into it.
Mm-hmm. It strikes me as this is the sort of thing that's well-suited to virtual reality.
Well, you mean virtual reality with the helmets?
With the headset or whatever you call it.
Yeah, well, so it's funny because I always talk about that virtual reality term. So basically, we do virtual reality, but for touchscreens.
Right.
The word virtual reality for many, many people mean that you're going to have to wear goggles.
Yes.
Or headsets. But, you know, the words virtual reality basically means that you're creating a virtual mm-hmm. environment. Mm-hmm. So to my understanding, and I'm a French person, of course, I mean, we do virtual realities, but we use a touchscreen medium to showcase it. We do not do virtual reality headset experiences simply because we don't believe so much in the use of those devices for commercial or sales or marketing aspects for many reasons. First of all, some people get dizzy using them. Some people get hot and, you know, you have to give that headset to another person. It's also you feel really disconnected with the actual sales environment. So there's a lot of barriers we find. And when we create those very large format touchscreen experiences, the whole goal behind that is to actually create a social environment between the company and its customers so that people can look at each other in the eyes. They can touch the same things. They can interact together, creating more of a collaborative experience.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'm totally in line with what you're saying. The times when I've tried VR, I've thought this is a novelty. It's unnecessary for what we're doing here. And, that's you're talking to a sales guy and you're wearing goggles and don't even know if the guy is still standing beside you. It just doesn't seem to work. And if you can just do it on a large canvas, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I mean, I love VR, but I think it's more for like a house use or like a home use, sorry, to either play video games or different things. But when you want to, and often, you know, people are like stressed when you want to go buy something, you want things to be fluid. So like having to wear that goggle, recalibrate things and all of this. And now, of course, the cable issue is getting actually now less and less bad, I would say, because in the beginning you need like a USB cable, an HDMI cable. Mm-hmm. So now you can have like those independent floating headsets, which is much better. But it's still, you have that problem of wearing something on your face. And we also look really forward in the future for augmented reality headsets. So we've done some HoloLens 1 and 2 and Magic Leap applications. Because again, now you still have to wear something, but at least, you know, it's kind of mixed reality. So you see the environment and you see the added layer that you want to add on top of it. Mm-hmm. But we still believe that even though with the latest technologies, it's still, your field of view is still quite small. I think that augmented reality will be a big, big thing in the future. For example, with cars, when you're going to be able to add that layer in front of your dash, or in sports, when you're going to be able to wear your helmet, or either a football or hockey player, to have like hints and tips within his helmets, or a motorcycle helmet,
right?
Or, you know, those types of activities where you already have to wear something in your head, and that will actually add a layer a lot, for example, in the construction industry or engineering industry, so that you can actually train or support people working remotely on oil rigs or whatever other types of installation. But again, there are some things on the market, but I don't find them enough robust. It's also extremely difficult to program in that to actually achieve a very like stable and robust experience. So right now we focus on touchscreen. We're also waiting quite much for the hologram, obviously. The holographic experiences are the next thing. I don't know when they're going to happen. I know I'm not the only one waiting after this. We all want to see Princess Leia and, you know, push your hand through her. Mm-hmm. It's one day going to happen, but maybe not in the next 2 or 3 years, I think, at least.
Yeah, I've seen some light field displays and things that are described as holograms that aren't. And I agree, we're at least, I'd say, 3 years out from something that's commercially viable and large enough and that's going to make any sense.
Yeah.
So when it comes to, you were describing how you could, let's say, have an apartment on or a condominium on a 30th floor and you want to have a view and see whether you can see the lake or the river or whatever from that balcony or window. How do you do all that? Are you shooting your own visuals, your own video of, you know, with drones and things like that to kind of piece it all together? Or are you just using what's available?
Oh, well, so you have to see, for the auditors who have not seen what we do, I strongly recommend to go look on YouTube so that you can understand a bit better what I'm going to talk about. But we don't use drone photography. So the cityscapes that we create in 3D are completely made out of 3D. So basically you can really travel from one rooftop to another while still experiencing really high quality visuals. So the way we do that, some of it is kind of secret. We use different technologies that enable us to recreate those cityscapes without too much effort. We always need very good, talented artists to do some handcraft job. For example, applying textures on places where a regular camera would not be able to go. We use different types of algorithms and artificial intelligence systems to make sure that we can benefit from what's out there in an easier way. We use different APIs, for example, NASA API and OpenStreetMap API to recreate street systems and other things like this. So it's a mix of many, many different things.
It seems like what you just described there is a sort of thing that first responders would love to have. Police departments and fire departments and so on would like to have a full view of the city from that kind of depth and detail.
Yes, we believe so. We are right now 60 people in the company. We have only 6 people working at sales. We were a startup for the first 5 years. So it's really just about 5 years ago that we started to to like expand our services and, you know, get better at what we do.
Yeah.
It's been quite a long journey so far. So right now, we are still expanding. We're forecasting to have maybe another 15 employees next year. All of that to say that there's so much potential on the market. It's really just a matter of finding the right timing and the right people to help us evolve in that sense. So as for now, anything related to security and first respondent has not been in our focus yet. Of course, if the police department of New York comes to us and say, guys, we want something, we will just do whatever they need as a custom request for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of benefit to just kind of staying in your lane and growing in what you know, as opposed to getting too diversified.
Yeah.
You mentioned you have about 60 people right now. Are you just bootstrap funded or do you have outside funding?
So we were self-funded for the first 9 years. Actually, I invested only $500 in the company. And since day one, I was able to generate enough revenues to pay initially my own salary and some of the marketing efforts that I needed to accomplish.
Well done.
Yeah, that's nice. About 5 years ago, I met my three new partners. Two of them are software engineers. I'm a graphic designer myself, so I was actually using for quite a long time different frameworks available to create 2D applications. But when I met with my three actual partners, so two of them are software engineers, and the third one is actually a very great salesperson. We started getting more and more sales. And one day it was about, actually it closed in 2018. We had one of our major customer who decided to invest in our company. So it's been about a year and a half. We are running a bit on fuel. And we're currently right now, I remember at the beginning of the podcast, I was talking about a product. So we're finalizing a new business plan to launch a product on the market by end of 2020 or 2021. So we're currently looking for a second round of funding, to tell you all.
Mm. So would it be with just venture backers, or would you be looking for a strategic partner who brings something as well?
We are looking definitely more for a strategic partner. So the first person we met had nothing to do with software development. Mm-hmm. It's a great person. He became our friend and we're meeting him on a regular basis. But he doesn't have enough knowledge in terms of software development technologies. So we're definitely looking to either partner up with a bigger company or finding someone who can not only fund our project, but also help us bring the future further.
Okay. So how do you sell? Are you just purely selling directly or do you have partners?
So we do have, like I said, we have six salesperson, one of them located in Bogota, another one in France, two in Toronto and two in Montreal. And as for the rest, we have kind of a reseller agreement.
Okay.
So it's kind of a strategy that we sign with mostly visualization studios or marketing agencies who want to actually make their customer benefit from our knowledge and expertise. So we will sign them and onboard them. It's just a matter of qualifying them and training them about what we can do and how to sell our services. Mm-hmm. And then they can actually operate with kind of an territorial exclusivity that we negotiate with them within their location on Earth.
I'm curious, when you get into something like a real estate presentation center, the focal point and the wow factor are your interactive screens, but I suspect there's also a need for just looping video that shows the development and, you know, sells the sizzle of the place. Do you also provide that within your software, or is that a parallel track for another company to provide?
Oh man, like digital signage software are very easy for us to do at this point. So, you know, we also have our content management system that runs on Azure, which is our backend system that connects all our different applications from where we can actually modify anything live in real time within any application. For example, again, for the real estate, could be pricing, could be availability, which is very important. So the backend system also has the possibility to connect to any RESTful API. So, for example, we can connect it to Salesforce, to WordPress, to Oracle, so that companies can actually use their existing management platforms to manage in real time the content that they see on their screens, whether it's a touchscreen or not.
Nice.
So we're pretty well prepared for that. So we don't, there's just less interest for us to just do digital signage. Like, we really look, like, we're a visionary company, we're an artistic company, we like wow factor, we like to innovate, and there's too many players, on the digital signage field. So it's something we can do, it's something we do when we're requested to do it. It's not something we
that you lead with, no. So if people want to find Smart Pixel, do they go to smartpixel.com or smartpixel.tv or what?
They do. A lot of people find us actually on YouTube by looking, for example, at touchscreen tables or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, on our website, smartpixel.tv, we actually just acquired the .com. So you can now go on smartpixel.tv or .com. And you will find, obviously, our phone numbers and a normal request. We have a new website coming in the middle of December, which will be much more explanatory. But we have tons of videos on our YouTube channel. And you can simply search for smartpixel.tv or smartpixel. You will find us, and we will be more than happy to organize a video conference meeting and demo you our applications. And we have a great showroom in Montreal where we have very, very large format touchscreen tables and touchscreen video walls on which we showcase actually all our different solutions.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Adrian. That was really, really interesting.
Yeah, great. Thank you very much for having me on your podcast. I would be happy to meet you again in person in another trade show soon enough, I guess.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you very much.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.